The Acquest Podcast, Funds Industry Conversations.
Demystify funds regulation and jargon with Acquest Academy. Tailored funds industry training programs to help you march up the learning curve.
Hello and welcome to the first episode in a special series of podcasts to coincide with the launch of our special report, First 18, From Survive to Thrive, a roadmap to help new fund management companies through their first 18 months post-authorization. That's a mouthful. Glad I got that out. So I'm delighted to be joined on this episode by Grelin O'Kelly and Tara Doyle. Would you guys like to introduce yourselves?
Sure, ladies first. My name is Tara Doyle. I'm a partner and the head of the asset management department in Matheson, and I'm a former chair of the Irish Funds Industry Association.
And Grelin O'Kelly, I'm chief risk officer at Davy Group, and I also am responsible for client asset oversight and data protection.
And both Tara and Grelin have contributed to First 18, so thank you very much for that, guys. So before we look at the where we're at for the new management companies, what challenges they might face, in terms of where we're at generally, are a lot of the applications through? Have we seen sort of most of the new manicos that we're going to see, or are we just at the tip of the iceberg, do you think?
In terms of Brexit readiness, I think certainly from our perspective, all the applications are through. So we managed to get, I think, our last one done the week of the original Brexit D-Day, so the week of 29 March, which was a huge relief. It wasn't necessary in the sense that 29 March came and went, but we did have all of our applications through and authorised by then. There may be a second wave, but my understanding is that most of the applications that the Central Bank had to approve did actually get approved in time for the original B-Day.
And so as we record in April 2019, we still don't have the final clue what Brexit is going to look like. But it was very interesting seeing the regulators report at the start of March on their F&P, fitness and probability applications in 2018. So they did see an increase of 50% in terms of new applications. And they broke it down across sector. And most of those, or the sector with the biggest amount of new applications, was the asset management sector. So not surprising then that a lot are through, I suppose, at this stage, given the amount that was done in 2018.
Yeah, I mean, I think there was a real effort on the part of the Central Bank to work towards 29 March as a deadline and to work back from it in terms of understanding that Irish companies were going to need to passport. So really, you couldn't treat 29 March as a deadline. You had to be trying to get most things authorised during 2018. And we really saw a ramping up in activity, an increasing in resources and a streamlining of processes in the bank to try and make that happen. And I think in sort of a pleasing contrast to some of the noise you're hearing out of Luxembourg in the last few weeks, where there are various sort of emergency Brexit measures being put in place to allow for continuity of activity post a hard Brexit because companies haven't been authorised yet. So I think it's an interesting difference in approach. One regulator making sure everything gets done in time for 29 March, and the other with a series of sort of emergency measures because they're acknowledging they haven't been able to get it done.
And so having arrived at the point where the authorization letter has been issued for a new manco, there obviously have been through an authorization process, which is involving and difficult, and they're probably a little bit fatigued when that letter arrives, and yet there's still a lot ahead of them. How are they feeling about the challenges for the next 18 months post-authorization?
Yeah, I mean, I think the authorization part was, on reflection, the easy bit. And actually getting ramped up and getting the resources, whether those be internal resources moving across and then all of the issues that come with relocation, or whether it is finding the talent on the ground in Ireland. I think it is one thing to be agreeing in theory the sort of roles you're going to put on the ground. It's then another thing entirely to be filling those roles and identifying the appropriate resources to put in place. So I think it has been more challenging maybe than some of the authorization headaches.
Yeah, I have this image in my mind of the legal team running the authorization application. The letter of approval comes in, they rock up to the chief risk officer and they say, there you go, there's our new Irish manco, just sort that out now. And so it's kind of late in the process when some of the other teams start to get involved, and now they have a new authorization, a new manco to babysit and keep in compliance. Is that kind of how it might happen?
Yeah, that's definitely one way of doing it. I think, as Tara said, the easy bit is almost over. All the form filling, the full application, you've answered all your questions. Now the hard part is not only on the commercial side, getting in the business, which is and moving across the business, but there's a huge focus now from the bank as there should be, might I say, in relation to setting up the appropriate sort of compliance frameworks and risk management frameworks to ensure that the highest standards, I mean, you know, Danny is, we're both ex-central bank colleagues, and we know one of the greatest fears for the central bank is these sort of post-boc type sort of entities and, you know, just sort of almost sham entities. They want real substance on the ground. They want real frameworks. They want real challenge metrics, frameworks, policies, procedures, controls. And the trajectory of that is only getting higher and higher and higher. I think it's almost, I have a feeling that the central bank are sort of trying out their new level of even more intrusive supervision, let alone authorization, but supervision once you're on the ground on the new entrance. And then that then is in a way tested and sort of fine-tuned with the new entrance. And then the existing population feels the love at a later stage.
And I'm sure they want to talk about that.
So yeah, absolutely.
We will pick that up. So as we've gone through putting together first 18 and we've talked to people about what the first 18 months might bring and the key challenges, we're seeing again and again issues like recruitment, personal taxation, legal, compliance, and then regulatory, what it's like to be regulated in Ireland, as being probably the five key challenges that firms are going to face. So Tara, amongst those five, is there one or two that jump out at you as being harder than the others, or some that look easier? And are we missing anything in that five? Yeah,
maybe it's a timing thing, but recruitment is certainly the first major issue that I think a lot of people are facing, because I suppose some of the others can only come after you actually have your recruitment done. And I think the manner in which the authorization process worked, whereby roles were really sort of identified as you went through the process in terms of you need to have these people and they need to be doing this particular role, they weren't necessarily part of the original plans of the different managers. So they didn't sort of come with six people in their minds that they were going to have in Ireland when they got their authorization. They might have originally thought they were going to have five or six, and that might have grown to 10 or 12. And the nature of those roles was part of a dialogue with the central bank. So from a recruitment perspective, it was only really once you got the authorization that you knew exactly what you needed to have. And maybe with some people, you had a person in mind. With a lot of CEOs, they were existing people who were going to move across to Ireland. But with a lot of other roles, you didn't really know what you were looking for until you got your letter of authorization. And then you had to go and look for this. And does that role exist in Ireland? And if you can't recruit in the short term, but you need to activate your license, are there secondment opportunities available? Is there some level of outsourcing you can do to local service providers? So all of those recruitment headaches have had to be teased through. And then some clients finding that when they go out into the market to recruit, maybe they're dealing with a returners market, and maybe they're dealing with people who want more flexibility or agile working arrangements. And how does that sit with a feet on the ground, full-time equivalent central bank approach to things? So we sort of have a relatively young market in terms of these types of roles, and yet a relatively mature employment market in terms of the demands people are now making on their employers. So trying to, you know, balance all of that. So recruitment's definitely been the biggest headache.
Good. And we will have in this series one episode dedicated specifically to recruitment. Grelin, anything that jumps out at you, those five, as being...
Oh, I totally agree. I mean, there's no substitute for some level of sort of prior knowledge or experience. You can't just parachute a freshly minted compliance or risk person to do one of these roles. They have to sort of have some idea of what's required, and it is becoming increasingly onerous. So Tara was explaining possibility as sort of a stopgap, or if I'm allowed to use the phrase, a backstop, is almost the use of people from, say, the law firms or from the accountancy firms to try and sort of step in. The people, the expertise is thin on the ground, and it's really such a huge area, you know, the breadth of knowledge that you have to have. And dare I say it, the accountability now that is being put on PCF functions in the Irish employment market in this space, And you know, the personal accountability, you know, that's, you know, there's the attractiveness of those positions is not as what it was. So I think you can't just put in a sort of a shoehorn a risk framework in or a compliance framework. It has to be around the products. You really have to know what you're doing. So I would fully concur with what Tara has said.
And in terms then of approaching your first 18 months, we will map what those five key challenges are. Is there something that firms are doing as a whole approach to try and bring the strands together and get themselves through those 18 months and arrive out the other side then with a company that's well-established, compliant, and really in a position to kind of thrive and drive on?
I think the key advantage that some companies have had over others has been really good project management skills in terms of getting themselves through the authorization process. So somebody bringing together all the different strands and not just having it sit within a legal team and go, this is a legal authorization process, let's just have the lawyers take care of that. But having somebody with project management capability sitting behind, making sure that things were moving along in terms of recruitment and in terms of all of the other issues that go into actually being able to operate as a company. And one concern I would have is that those project management roles tend to be time specific, you know, and sometimes they can be short term hires even within asset management companies for a particular project, as opposed to an ongoing project management capability. And you need as much project management, I would say, post authorization as you did pre authorization. So I think somebody actually project managing and not leaving it to the CEO to have to project manage once they get in situ is key to actually making sure those first 18 months are successful.
So extend the contract for the consultant. This Brexit is a great growth initiative for exactly. The...
Yeah.
Great. Grella, on your side, anything that sort of helps one man go over another to get through that 18 months in terms of bringing the strands together?
Yeah, I mean, you cannot, there is no substitute for planning and planning and planning and writing it all down, because, I mean, the breadth and depth of the work that has to be done, and this is just not even the commercial side, is really astounding. If you're lucky enough, you could get a compliance person or a risk person with that sort of project management, with those project management sort of skills, that's great. It's actually preferable, you know, so, but then you're into a cost thing and, you know, you're really, I mean, this is an expensive business. You need to have those skills around the sort of the whole operational side of things, the cyber side of things, and the conduct and culture side of things. There's all these different sort of skill sets that are all there. They're all overlapping. So again, it goes back to the people, the knowledge, and you know, I suppose that the amount of money that a company may have to spend on this. It's not a simple decision to make to come over. Once it's made, the effort does not diminish. 18 months even, I know we talk about 18 months, but it does go on even longer than that.
Certainly the barriers to entry are quite high now when you take into account not just the immediate regulatory framework, but everything that goes with it and the other pieces of regulation, absolutely, the cross-cut and things like culture and individual accountability and all of the regulatory focuses on that. So
yeah, may I just say one thing, just as a sort of an observation on that, is that I think historically the central bank has been very much I use this word advisedly, copy the FCA in that conduct space, which is really sort of all pervasive. The central bank, in my opinion, now is beginning to diverge from the FCA. The FCA are very much a lot principle based, and you know, maybe, you know, strong on the conduct side, very strong on the conduct side, but the central bank have really upped their game in that regard, and they're becoming a lot more, you know, granular and even more intrusive than I would say the FCA. And so there is a bit of a divergence. So I think anybody from the UK who's coming over has to be prepared for that as well, just because they've come from the UK and they're confident that they can deal with the FCA. They still have to be very, very much on alert to deal with the sort of, I would say, additional expectations of the central bank in this space.
And it's no coincidence that we have a director general with responsibility for conduct, and now you're seeing this increased focus on conduct and what happens when the regulator isn't necessarily in the room looking at you.
I don't want to frighten people, but the director general in charge of conduct is also the former head of enforcement, and still in charge of the enforcement division. So there's a sort of a double-edged sword there. from what I would call a very, very capable lady running that. She has very high expectations from any regulated firm and from the people who work in those regulated firms. But once you're in and you have a good relationship and you spend the money and you've accepted the situation, then it's great. And, you know, it's, you know, once you meet those expectations, I think really it is very positive.
So let's look beyond then this initial setup period when the company has these challenges. And let's say they've set their foundations in place. What can they look forward to then in terms of being an Irish regulated management company? What opportunities are there for them to have a business that thrives and really adds to the bottom line of the group as a whole?
I mean, I think the first thing that they can look forward to is having the passport and having the certainty of that passport, knowing that Ireland will be in the EU when nobody else is in the EU, and that we will provide that ongoing certainty of access into Europe, and that the approach that the central bank has taken to regulating these entities and the level of coordination there has been at a European table means that what they have agreed with the central bank and what they've put in place essentially has a European blessing as well. So they had that regulatory certainty. But then in terms of growth of their business, what we've seen with Irish entities in the past is that what they're required to have on the ground soon becomes a footnote in what they grow to be. And already we can see managers who've had to make that step and had to put people on the ground in Ireland looking at the new opportunities and the new possibilities that an Irish base creates in terms of putting additional roles in here. You know, in terms of looking at the cost base of having people in the UK and going, well, if I lose a headcount in the UK, if somebody resigns, do I rehire in the UK or do I put that role now into Ireland? And I think people will see that they have greater diversity in terms of being able to draw on Irish resources, a new location in terms of being able to hire people. And also, as I say, that sort of European element to it, where you have a country very invested in Europe and a country that is going to increase its European presence in terms of its ability to influence and lobby. And as a regulator, I think our regulator is very concerned to be influential around the EU 27 table as well. So they get to take advantage of all of that into the future.
Anything missing from that, Graham? Anything to add?
I'd like to sort of say that I've always found, and this is different to a lot of jurisdictions in Europe and possibly the UK as well, is that once you're in and those costs that you've incurred have become, I like that phrase, become a footnote to the business. I think it's a unique thing here in Ireland that you can pick up the phone to our regulator here and you can have very useful bilateral meetings. You can sound them out. You can talk to them. They're very reasonable people. You play within the boundaries of where you're supposed to play. And they're as delighted to speak to industry participants, learn what's going on, increase their own knowledge levels, which they're very keen to do. And I think that's a really unique selling proposition here for Ireland as well. If people have, they should have the confidence to be able to pick up that phone and speak to the central bank as almost colleagues in a common purpose.
Great. And let me just offer the last word to Tara on this point. One of the motivations for the first 18 special report has been, we know a lot of firms are coming to Ireland as a Brexit solution. We want those companies to grow and thrive and not to be just a compliance exercise. We really want them to establish businesses that add value for them. So as former head and chair of Irish Funds, I'm sure that's something that the whole industry is buying into, that assisting these companies to really thrive.
Absolutely. I mean, it's interesting to talk about it being Brexit driven, because quite a few of our clients will say, we were going to do this anyway. So Brexit just dictated the timetable. We always had plans to have more substance in Ireland, and Brexit has just accelerated some of those plans. But in terms of the industry wrapping their arms around this new activity, the industry is hugely engaged with all of the new companies that are establishing in Ireland. Irish Funds is setting up new working groups to address their concerns and to make sure that they're getting their feedback into the process, and they're building a better industry for everybody.
Great. So let's wrap it up there for the first in this special series of podcasts to coincide with First 18. Thank you very much both to Grelin and to Tara for co-hosting. Thank you to Gavin Timlin on sound from Create Sound. And listen out and you'll catch the next in the series on First 18 podcasts. Thank you.
At Quest Academy, demystifies funds regulation and jargon, helping you march up the learning curve. If you want to see how good we are at what we do, apply for free in-person 45-minute masterclass. Check out aquest.ie for more details.
The Aquest Podcast, Funds Industry Conversations.